Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's taken us, 153 episodes to get into Hell or High Water.
Maybe we've been here the whole time.
Yes,
for sure. Just recognized it.
Yes, it's a big dose of reality. Hell or High Water is a film that was put out, it was this year or previous, 2016. Yeah. And it was up for an Oscar this year, 2017, at when we're recording this. And this is episode 153.
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor for Jeff Bridges, Best Editing, I believe, and Best Original Screenplay. And the thing that impressed me about that is all the other nominees were much more recent movies. You know, they'd come out late in the year, so everybody noticed them. But this one got remembered for these four categories, and it had come out in August and largely sunk below the radar. The critics saw it, and a few people like me went, ooh, I don't know why, it really grabbed my attention. But most people hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, and I remember seeing an ad, I believe, and being interested. But this movie was made for like $12 million, it says here. Yeah. So it was very low budget. Lots of big stars in it, though. Well, I say yes. Lots, but really two, right? Chris Pine and Jeff Bridges. Ben Foster, of course, who was terrific. Yeah. They were all good.
Oh, yeah, everybody was good. You can tell they wanted to do the movie because Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine don't have to do a movie like this if they don't want to. You feel like Chris Pine's going, I can be something besides Captain Kirk, everybody.
Yeah, he saw what happened to Shatner. Although Shatner's done a lot of different things, but he's always Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Right. So David McKenzie is new for me. David McKenzie is the director. Had you seen anything by him before now, before this?
Oh, no. And he has not done tons of movies. He's one of those people who's always praised. I did have something on him, but he's Scottish, I think.
Yeah. That's what it says here on IMDb. It said he was born, in 1966 in Scotland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's made 9 films. And the thing is really interesting. Well, they say he resists genre and typecasting, and his films cannot be neatly pigeonholed. And I can believe that from seeing this. He did, or his staff, managed to capture West Texas so perfectly. That's one of the things that I've been talking about this movie with various movie discussion groups. Mm-hmm. And the thing everybody gloms onto right away is this is just like when A, I was raised there, B, I lived there for a little while, or C, all the many trips I've taken through there. I mean, he really captured that. Jeff Bridges goes, hell, I love West Texas, you know? Just like, yep.
That's cool. Yeah, there was a moment in the movie, remember, when we'll get into the details here in a second, but a woman trying to describe people who robbed a bank said that she knew they were from around here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, even though they were wearing masks and everything, she knew just from the way that they were, the way that they spoke, that they were from around here.
Yeah.
Right. So that's West Texas, huh?
Yeah, pretty much West Texas.
Yeah.
They captured, and the thing I liked, I guess we should do the summary, but mm-hmm. one of the things I like is they captured the past and the present and a bit of the future. When you think of, they have, you know, the guy driving cattle away from the fire, and at the convenience store, there's a cowboy getting on his horse.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but they have the present, which is all the people we see. And then I guess the future, I was thinking of the guy in that bright green sports car. That's not a great future. But I mean, it captures all those elements and kind of ties them together.
Yeah, that's not unlike Idaho. You know, the small town that I moved here from was very much like that. You know, it wasn't uncommon at all to have horses in the street. We herded cows, all that stuff.
Yeah.
The terrain was similar too, except for we've got more hills.
Yeah.
More mountains.
Yeah,
well, yeah,
definitely.
If you pounded Idaho flat, it'd be bigger than Texas, right?
Well, it still wouldn't be Texas. We're trying not to hold that against it.
That's
and actually,
for sure.
This was filmed in New Mexico because I think the Texas Film Commission had stopped giving discounts or whatever.
Hmm.
But New Mexico still does. So they went right over the border. So they were as close as they could get.
Mm-hmm. That's neat. Yeah.
But it looked just the same. It's just the same. You know, that's an imaginary line. So anyway, for a brief synopsis, the summary of the story is two brothers begin robbing bank branches, and they're always branches of the same bank. They always take small bills. They don't rob the safe. They don't take tons of money, and they do it early in the morning, and no one understands why. And the feds... I've been told this is not really correct, but in the movie, they say, well, the feds don't really care about this. It's not enough, and they've got too much going on already, so they're not going to really look into it. And the one person who's interested is a Texas Ranger who's getting ready to retire, and you could tell as you get to know him, he loves a puzzle. He loves figuring things out, and he makes his partner, who's a Comanche, or I guess what do you say, of Comanche derivation or whatever.
Yeah,
go on the road with him to investigate this when the partner says, I think we can get all the info we need right here. We don't have to go do this in person. And so it becomes about why the brothers are doing this and can the Texas Rangers stop them?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say for me, one of the most interesting questions to ask about it is, who were you rooting for? Because I was rooting for both of them, both sides.
Yeah, it's hard not to. And I think that's what the movie does so incredibly well. And, you know, we never did mention the guy who wrote this movie, who I think is really the star, Taylor Sheridan.
Agreed.
But in such a short space, and more than is common for movies, I felt like I saw enough of these people's lives to know that their worst moments were not everything, right? And we were seeing a lot of their things. So more than in a typical movie, I felt like I knew all four of these people, and the four being the two brothers and Jeff Bridges and his partner. Alberto. There was this depth to the characters that I think was uncommon. Mm-hmm. And I think that led to this morality things, you know, where the brothers are doing horrible things. They're very different people, but similar in ways. And then the same with the partners, the Rangers. They're not all good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the morality of the thing and the decisions that they make take on a really difficult... It's difficult to judge sometimes when you see what's going on and why they're doing it. But then you say, well, yeah, they may be doing it for a good reason, but that's still not a reason to do it. You know,
right.
And it just makes it much more complex, which is what we humans are. So I think that's why it hit me pretty well. It was, you come out of there feeling that you've just seen and met some people.
Yeah. And all in 102 minutes.
I mean,
well, and that thing you say about, you know, they have good reasons for what they're doing, and you feel like they have good reasons for what they feel like they have good reasons for what they're doing. And you can be sympathetic. And I liked the characters, even that crazy brother.
Mm-hmm.
Who's, oh, he's so clearly just always on the edge of exploding into violence. You still love him.
Yeah.
Because as you say, you get to see enough of what he's really like and kind of how he got that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and there were moments that were just brilliant, you know, like for example, after the first banks are robbed, should I go into that?
Sure. Yeah, let's just say that's pretty much the plot.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We can talk about spoilers after this point because I feel like people need to watch it.
Anyway. If you haven't watched it, please do. It's very, very good. Really terrific. Yeah. So what I was going to say is after the first banks are robbed and they bury the car, which is cool. I mean, there's this heist aspect to the whole thing. You know, this is very well thought out what they're doing, that I liked as well as a heist fan. But they're in the house and they're drinking beer. And then in moments, probably 30 seconds worth of film, if that, we saw something out of the brother where he said, "Is this where she was?"
Yeah.
And he talked about, apparently their mom was in this room and one of the brothers was taking care of her and the other brother was off in prison and was missing it. And, passed away in that house, right?
Well, that's not exactly right. Okay. That's how it seems, but it's, you can, for one thing, the hospital bed's there and still has the IV stand and everything. So you feel like it was relatively recent.
Yeah.
But, and in fact, you know, it is later, I guess, because of the mortgage aspect, but the brother at a different point when they're in the diner and he's asking, when Tanner, who's the crazy brother, asks Toby, who's the one who I call the quote, good brother, he's asking him, when's the last time you saw your boys? And he's divorced. Yeah. And he goes, "Oh, well, it's been, you know, since we all went to the rodeo together." And he goes, "That was right after I got out of prison. That was a year ago."
Oh, that's right.
We need to go see him. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of context they add in later on. So what you find out is he's been out for a year, but the mother, as they make clear when they're outside talking, she had cut off Tanner. She had cast him out. And the reason she cast him out is because they had an abusive father. And finally, Tanner couldn't take it and he shot him. Right, as an FBI agent says later, it was a hunting accident in almost the bar a throwaway in April. Thing.
Yeah, that's right. It's amazing how they revealed that.
Yeah. And so what you see is there was an abusive relationship going on. And even though one of the reasons he killed him was because they couldn't get away from him and he was abusing the mother. The mother then turns around and casts him out. So he's not allowed to come around.
Right. That even adds more depth to that scene that I didn't catch before. And what's interesting is you get that before it's revealed. You'd have to watch it again to have that. At least I would. Yeah. Amazing. But anyway, but I like that. It makes it rewatchable. So I just like how this director was able to do that kind of thing where, you know, in a very short space, revealing things, you know, not through flashback and things like that. It's just now, right?
Well, yeah, because one of the other things that's revealed there that you really, the second or third time through, is when you're kind of putting together all those little hints about the timeline because of the relationship and all these things. And when they're in the house, Tanner says, "Well, you know, I could have helped you with stuff. I could have helped you, you know, wash floors or clean up or whatever." And Toby says, "That doesn't seem like, you know, cleaning up doesn't really seem like your style." And he goes, "No, I'm just good for robbing banks." And you suddenly go, "Oh my gosh, she didn't have to know if he was there helping the other brother. The other brother only calls him when he wants him to help with his bank heist job." There's just a tinge of, you know, this is what I'm good for.
Right, right.
Yeah. So it's a more complex relationship between the brothers, even though they love each other and they support each other, obviously, from the way you find out that it's, I mean, I was really surprised to find out that it was the good brother who had planned everything.
Yeah. Otherwise, well, the bad brother would have had to, you know, he would have really had some talking to do to get the other one talked into it. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, and even at the end there, the guy was like, "I know you've planned this." You know, of the two of you, you were the one who figured out what to do or how to do this. And yeah, but we can get that to that a little bit later. At the very opening of the movie, we see, you know, right outside the first bank that they rob, three crosses, right, on the on the wall of a building across the street. And they're very deliberately framed, right?
And right before we see them begin their first robbery.
Right, right.
They're forcing the teller into the bank.
Yeah.
As she opens the door. So as we've discussed before, you never see that kind of symbolism, especially that deliberately framed, without it being a choice that the director wants to tell us something.
Yeah. And I, you know, immediately the thing, just the image, brings to mind, the two thieves that were crucified with Jesus. And, I did go to, I know you said that you did too, but I did go to the Bible and reread that passage after watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And trying, I haven't quite worked out exactly how it all fits. But yeah, go ahead. You're about to say something.
I was going to say, what if I read that
passage?
Please
do. Please do.
Because I also have been pondering that. It's not simple, I think. And you pointed out to me that when they're inside the bank,
mm-hmm.
in one of their initial conversations where we're finding out who everyone is, because the teller says, what are you guys, stupid?
Yeah.
And this is when we find out the one brother's kind of crazy. He's like, you calling me stupid?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Chris Pine, Toby goes, oh, no, no, everybody look at me. Look at me. You can see in his eyes, get through the mask, that he's suddenly panicking. He's always
and that was awesome. I love that when, because I've saw it two times, and the second time through when I watched it, Chris Pine's eyes were huge.
Yeah.
It was like,
talk about acting with your eyes.
He was silent, but his eyes were just huge. He was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen here?
Yeah. I got to control this because there's going to be no killing or shooting.
Right.
So you were pointing out that through the window of the bank, you can see those crosses again.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So while they're beginning, we see it again. So let me read the passage. It's Luke 23, verses 39 to 42.
Mm-hmm.
Now one of the criminals hanging there reviled Jesus, saying, are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us. The other, however, rebuking him, said in reply, have you no fear of God, for you are subject to the same condemnation? And indeed we have been condemned justly, for the sentence we received corresponds to our crimes, but this man has done nothing criminal. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when I come, or remember me when you come into your kingdom. He replied to him, amen, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise.
Hmm.
And I was thinking about that, not just as we were talking before we started, I was thinking, what is it that this shows us? Those two thieves both did whatever horrible things they did. And he said, we're justly up here with this horrible punishment. But what he does is he recognizes the truth in front of him that Jesus didn't deserve it. And that he is somebody who can take me with you. Remember me when you're in your kingdom. You are God.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point. Right. And
so, we tend to think of it as the reward. Oh, you'll be with me in paradise. But I was thinking, what did that man see? So in that sense, you wonder if it is about seeing the truth and acknowledging the truth.
Yeah. And I think that that works for me most, because it's Toby, Chris Pine's character, I think sees the truth of what's happening. And I don't know, as I'm talking about this, it's like, he might be the colder one of the two.
I don't know if that's really right. I think the brother, the crazy brother.
The crazy brother?
He's the truth, because he's the one who at one point, Toby says, you're talking like we're not going to get away with this. And Tanner says, I don't know anyone who ever got away with nothing.
Yeah. And at the end, he kind of sacrifices himself, right? He's like,
yeah,
this is what I need to do to make all of this worth our while, I think. But you know, there's also a very deep thing going on with him alone, but he's like, I'm going to do this for you.
Yeah. He has that. He looks away. He says, he looks away. And when they're in the cars, he says, love you.
Right.
And then he looks back at him and pulls his sunglasses down, so they're looking eye to eye, and says, mean it. And there's this moment of silence.
Yeah.
And Toby says, I love you too.
Right.
Or love you, or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's their one acknowledgement, because they both know he's probably going to die. He's leading the posse away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he does reprehensible things himself, because he ain't quite right. But he's the sincere one who knows exactly what's going on.
Well, that makes him the good thief.
Yeah. Well,
doesn't it?
But that's why this movie is more complex. And I really think that the reason they don't give us easy answers is they want us to kind of think about it ourselves. Because do you mind if we skip ahead?
No,
to the very
please
end of the
movie go ahead
for a minute. So mm-hmm. the things that are tied together, I mean, throughout the movie, religion is being discussed on different levels by different people, not all the time, but just, you know, like Alberto is watching a televangelist. And so then that brings up a conversation about, you know, this guy wouldn't know God if he crawled up his leg and bit him on the pecker, says Jeff Bridges in his charming way. And there's Christian music on the radio sometimes and people are going, turn it off. But at the very end, Marcus, who's Jeff Bridges, is on the porch. He's been talking to Toby, who's Chris Pine, and they're both dressed identically. They're wearing the exact same shirt. So they're almost like mirror images. And we kind of know that. They've both been the instigating person among the pair of people that they're with. They're the smart ones. They're the ones who aren't the practical ones necessarily because they're so focused on what they want. They don't think about the cost to other people. So you get to the end and here they are facing each other. And Marcus says, you know, well, maybe I will come by and I'll give you peace. And you're like, it's a bit threatening. And you're just like, oh, the peace of the grave. Oh, my gosh. What's going to happen? Shoot out. And Toby says, well, maybe I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
So you're like,
wow,
they're posturing. But what you start to think is they're so much alike and they're both completely alone. They both have no one who really understands them or really loves them. And you think, will they maybe become reluctant friends? But going back to the three crosses, and I realize this could be a leap, but there is a lot of religious stuff, symbolism and stuff. You know, think about our church. You give each other the sign of peace. You give it to everybody around you. The idea being whether or not you know these people, you wish everyone around you peace, you're all reconciled before you go to communion together. These are two men who both have trouble seeing the real truth as everybody else sees it. They're both super smart and everything. But I wonder if that kind of ties back in. I mean, because of the two Texas Rangers, Alberto is the one who seems most grounded. He sees what's real. Like when he's talking about the land and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, one thing that you said that has stuck way out, and finally I think I fully understand it now, is you said that they both, meaning Marcus and Toby, aren't really measuring what effect their actions are having on other people.
Right.
Because Marcus drug Alberto around, you know, right to his death. And mm-hmm. it was almost like Marcus was on this last hurrah, or he had something to prove, or whatever was going on inside Marcus that was driving him. He was taking Alberto with him. And the same with Toby. It's like, you know, like you said, you know, Tanner said, you know, I'm only good for robbing banks. Well, if that's the way Toby was treating him, he drugged Tanner around, even though it looked like Tanner was really the one instigating everything. You know, it was really Toby.
Yeah.
Right. And it was Tanner put in the element, you know, doing what he does. But the person who unleashed him was Toby.
Yeah. And it's like Jeff Bridges says, he goes, you know, if you were taking all that money for yourself, or if it was Tanner who'd been doing this, he goes, he'd have bought a boat and a big car and had a lot of women and drugs. And he would have spent all that money so that he would have an excuse to go out and do it again.
Yeah.
Because he is a thrill seeker and dangerous and violent. And that's what he really likes. He goes, but you, I don't understand. And so he understands Tanner. Tanner's easy. But on the other hand, the two brothers do take care of each other, because when, you know, we've throughout the movie, time and again, Toby is stepping in to de-escalate a situation that it just takes, you know, a lighted match to set Tanner off. And for instance, the convenience store where the guy drives up in the green car and he's threatening Tanner by waving the gun around to show what a big man he is. And Toby comes up from behind and just beats the holy hell out of him.
That was amazing.
Like, yeah.
Boy,
and then,
boy, you think there are 10 of me, right? Is what he said.
Yeah. Well, and Toby says to Tanner when he gets in the car, he goes, he could have killed you. And Tanner says, that's not the way it would have gone down, little brother. And you're just like, that's when I was like, oh my gosh, he did that to save his life. Because Tanner was never going to put up with having his honor threatened like that.
Right, right. But Tanner knew that too. Remember, when he drove away, he said, I told you, boy. 10 of me.
Right. Right. But and somebody pointed out to me, they said, you had to earn his animosity in a sense, because like when Tanner picks up the machine gun, which I was like, holy crap, both times in the movie, I'd forgotten that. And he's shooting at the posse who's stopped in the road behind them because their tire got shot out or whatever. He doesn't kill anyone.
No.
Just shoots up their cars and they can all leave. He just wants them to go away.
Yeah. That's right, but then he changes, right? When he's up on the hill, with the sniper, he feels like the lawmen deserve it. Okay.
I think.
Huh.
Well, also remember at the very beginning, and then a couple times throughout the movie, he says "Lord of the Plains."
Yeah.
And he has that encounter with the guy's name is Bear, the Comanche in the casino.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pushing Bear, of course, because that's what he does. And Bear says, I'm a Comanche. Do you know what that means? It means enemy to everyone. And Tanner says, do you know what that makes me? A Comanche.
Mm-hmm.
And he stares him down.
Yeah.
And I think that's his whole persona, that Lord of the Plains. He knows he's from a bygone time and he doesn't fit in. And that's giving him way too much credit for any kind of real deep thinking. But I just think on a visceral level, he knows that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which took us kind of far away from.
No, it's just interesting. I'm just thinking about the doubles, the two pairs,
mm-hmm.
right? I've got the brothers and then I've got the Rangers
mm-hmm.
and how they're alike and how they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the funny thing, now that I think about it, I hadn't really thought about this till now. Tanner knows he doesn't quite fit in. But on the other hand, Alberto does fit in. See, because he's, and I did know this, he's paired up also with Bear, the Comanche in the casino, who is in the casino on Indian land and all this. So he's going his people's way right now. Well, Alberto is a Texas Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
He's fully integrated into popular or not popular culture, but the white man's society, the predominating society, social structure. You know, when he retires, he wants to get a boat and go to Galveston, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so, or wherever.
Yeah.
And so he's the opposite from Tanner in that. He's the one who does fit in.
That's something. That's something.
Yeah, it's the contrast mm-hmm. and compare the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And just, and like I say, there's not necessarily a real answer because he knows just as well as Bear does when he's like, he's mad. You can see that anger simmering there in him, but it doesn't come out in Alberto till they're sitting there kind of staking out the bank. And he's talking about 150 years ago, it was, you know, the white man's army who was pushing my people off this land. Now here are you guys and it's the banks pushing you guys off the land. There's always someone pushing people off the land.
Did you get the feeling that Toby is going to be haunted by this the rest of his life?
Oh, yeah.
Did you really? I didn't get that feeling.
Oh, I really did.
Did you? Because I know at the end, you know, Marcus tells him that he's going to be haunted. But I never felt any kind of repentance or that from Toby.
Huh.
I felt like I did the right thing for what I needed. And it turned out like it turned out.
I think for me that it hinges on two things. And yours could be a perfectly valid interpretation. I mean, for me, it comes down to the fact that, you know, in this instance, because they're dressed alike and they understand each other and all this kind of thing, I feel like when I see Marcus, he's maybe been there, or, well, I mean, for one thing, his partner is dead and he's going to be haunted by that. But there are other things. I just feel like he's speaking from experience.
Yeah, and I do too. Yeah. I feel like Marcus is speaking from experience, but maybe Toby's, if he's going to be there in the future, he's not there then. I didn't feel like he was there to me.
Well,
I didn't see any of that.
The other thing was, is watching Toby, to me, he seemed almost like a stray cat or dog who was like, look what I'm doing. I'm doing this because one of my things was, you know, he tells him in an oblique answer, he's like, why did you do it? Says Marcus. And he goes, or what, how did you do it? And he goes, no, I'll figure that out. Why did you do it?
Yeah.
And he doesn't have all the pieces to put together. And Toby says, I've been poor my whole life, like a disease passing from generation to generation, but not my boys, not anymore. But he thinks the money's going to save it for his kids. But I don't think that poverty is the real problem and money is the answer. And I think that's what he's already discovering. His ex-wife doesn't look at him any more nicely than she did before. She's still kind of scornful and dismissive. And he's like, well, I did this and I'll be back tomorrow. And she's like, yeah. When the boys come up, they don't even say hi to him. They just kind of stand there for a minute and go in the house. So he's still being treated like he's still the outsider. And who really understood him and loved him unconditionally was his brother.
Right.
His brother's gone.
And he got his brother killed. Maybe it's something that's coming down the road, but
right. And he got his brother killed. So even though maybe he's not haunted right at the moment, he still feels fully justified in what he did. Like Marcus says, you got all these people killed. And he goes, I didn't kill anyone. And Marcus says, when you set this in motion, you killed all those people. And I think that's what Marcus has learned in his long life, that he can look and say, you might not be feeling it right now, buddy, but you're going to. Mm. And I think that's what I carried forward and said, even though the way they say, maybe I'll give you peace, maybe I'll give you peace, is threatening, has threatening undertones, I feel like it may morph into an uneasy comradeship.
Yeah, so as we're talking here, I can imagine now, you know, 5 years down the road,
yeah,
Toby looking for Marcus,
mm-hmm.
you know, visiting him on a porch somewhere.
Yeah, and maybe it's one of those things where they think they hate each other the whole time, but they're still kind of drawn to each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because we see Marcus, he's got no one but his dog. He's sitting there in that nice, clean, empty house.
Hell or High Water Part 2.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not one that thinks that the sequel is needed, but it's interesting to think about, you know, what could happen.
Because
I don't think, you know, Toby, I can't imagine Toby doing this again for some reason. But I could imagine, uh-uh. like you're saying, him realizing that this wasn't worth it and going to tell Marcus that.
Yeah, because here's the other thing, and this isn't even mentioned or hinted at, but the thing that all of us individually here thought when we were watching it is, you know, you dump a lot of money on kids, even if it's just the percentage of the trust. Does that usually turn out well?
No,
usually
it does
not. Usually like you have the kid in the green car.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yep.
So that's no guarantee either, and I think – although clearly the one judgment that's made in this movie is that banks are evil. It's like having Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, there is that too. They're saying, yeah, well, the banks, you know, being banks, you know, they foreclose. That's what they do.
Right.
And that's what they've been doing in West Texas.
Right.
And they are robbing from the bank and nobody feels remorse for that. I mean, even, you know, the guys in the diner watching the bank be robbed, they were quite happy about it, you know.
Yeah.
Well done, you know. And then it was almost as if he wished he could do it, because he was saying, you know, those days of robbing banks and getting away with it, they're just long gone, as if he was lamenting that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the bank is not a person. You're not doing any harm by robbing that bank. Yeah.
Well, he also said, I watched the bank get robbed, them rob the bank that's been robbing me for 30 years.
Right, right.
And the one of the things that starts this whole process is the bank did a reverse mortgage with the mother. So do you know what you know about reverse mortgages?
Sure.
Yeah. So it's funny, when I was talking about this yesterday with some people, one of them was a lawyer, and he said, you know, they almost never give you advantageous rates or anything for that. They're interested in getting the property. Of course, that's the point. That's why they're giving money.
But that's the point of all of it.
But a lot of times the kids don't know anything about it.
Yeah, right. And it's usually, isn't it aimed often at senior citizens?
Yes.
It's like, this is a way for you to get money for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And then we'll end up with the house when you're done.
Yeah, you're getting the equity out of the house because we're paying you right now.
Yeah.
Instead of
so
you selling
when you
it right
die,
now.
When you die, your kids don't get the house, we do.
Right.
Right. And that's kind of what the aim is. You know, it's like anything you get in the mail that says, hey, you know, join us for whatever, it's not going to be in your advantage. That's the bank's advantage. All of it,
there's
right?
There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, and they go out of their way. And I have to say, to me, this was the clumsy part of the movie. They went out of their way to make sure we understood the banks were evil every time. So when Toby goes to pay off the mortgage, the guy's like, oh, yeah, well, I'll get that paperwork done. You don't have to wait around. He's like, no, I'll wait. Oh, well, I'll fax it later. It could take a while. No, no, I'll wait and watch you do it now. The implication is that the next day will be too late and he'll delay to the next day so they still get it. So I felt like, compared to the subtlety of the rest of the movie, it was a bit heavy-handed. But it gave you somebody clear-cut to dislike.
Yeah, and then at the very end of that part of the movie, he turns, and I knew this was part of the plan, but he said, do you guys do trusts? You know, so by putting the trust in the bank's name, he's made it in the bank's interest not to pursue any more investigation.
Right.
Which was pretty smart. But that's why, you know, the Rangers aren't looking for that other person. All they say is, you know, when after Marcus retires, he goes back and he's, you know, why aren't we going after the brother? And they said, because he's clean and the bank is not pursuing this anyway. Right.
Yeah, the bank doesn't even care.
The bank doesn't care, and as far as we can tell, his brother is clean, and it wasn't his brother that was his partner.
Yeah, and none of the witnesses we showed his picture, right. None of the witnesses, not the old guys in the diner, not the young waitress,
right.
Whose tip they took as evidence when he left her a $200 tip.
That's right.
Well, that was it.
That
was never
mean.
Gonna.
That was unnecessary.
Well, she wouldn't have identified it anyway,
anyway,
because she had a soft spot for him, but come on.
Yeah. That was horrible.
And I think also, speaking of doubles, I think one of the things that I like is what they did to kind of show you the toll that living under those circumstances, that hardscrabble life for so long, takes. So you've got a couple of examples of with the waitresses. You know, there's that one older waitress who, like, she's like, I'll tell you, what don't you want? Do you not want the corn or do you not want the beans?
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Bridges says she's this place has a rattlesnake for a waitress. You know, you boys both want the iced tea? Yes, ma'am. Yes, we do. And she's just awful. But she's the twin. She's doubled up against the young waitress.
Yeah.
Who... half of her mortgage payment would be $200. So that's almost nothing, but she still can't get it. And then it gets taken away from her. And you have the old guys in the diner who are just sitting kind of cackling over what's going on. They're not going to cooperate. They hate the bank. But you have the young guys who all show up when somebody texts to somebody that the bank's being robbed right now. And they all show up with their guns, like they're an old time posse, but with their pickup trucks.
Right.
So, these young guys who are like, we're going to do the right thing or whatever, they turn into those old guys after 30 years.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And, when Donald Trump was elected, several reviewers, and I think maybe it's Slate.com. Anyway, they said this movie was a possible explanation for Donald Trump's election.
Okay, how so?
Think of these disaffected people who aren't part of any group that anybody cares about. They're not from a part of the country anybody ever wants to go visit. No money's being given to them for anything. And here they are, desperate. And the lengths that this guy is driven to are totally wrong. Because he, you know, Chris Pine, Toby. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of desperation you start to feel.
Sure.
When you look at your kids who you love and you want to do what you can to protect them. Was it the right thing to do? Absolutely not. But these are the people who go, something's got to change. And they don't care how crazy it might seem, or or they don't evaluate things the way everybody else does. They're not thinking like that because they're down there scrabbling around trying to survive.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that assessment at all then. You know, Michael Moore, he was one of the people who right after the election, in fact, before the election even occurred, he was like, we're not focused on the right things, you know, because he's on the Democrat side.
Mm-hmm.
And but he gave an interview, I don't know, a week or two after the election. Well, it was a discussion. I think it was on Morning Joe that was really quite good. But he was saying very similar things. He was saying the Democratic Party has stopped talking to the people like this. You know, we have an entire class of people that nobody seems to care about, like you said.
Yeah.
And that is a decent explanation for what happened.
Yeah, people, well, and it's not, of course, just this area, but it's a good illustration of, you know, good, normal, regular people. But when you're just ground down relentlessly, you'll do anything. And don't get me wrong, if you're a Trump supporter, I'm not saying, you know, oh my gosh, I'm just saying that you want something different. And he offered something different. And nobody was paying attention to these people. And that's why it surprised everybody else, because they all vote. They have a voice, too.
Yeah. Interesting times we live in, no doubt. No doubt. But yeah. Wow, this movie, it's really something, how many doubles there are going on in here.
Mm-hmm.
What a technique that is. It's almost like, you know, well, you've got two people, one at the end of his life, one kind of in the prime of his life. And I'm thinking about Marcus and Toby.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, so what does the author kind of start off with them in similar circumstances, but one of them makes different decisions than the other one made? Or the other one, Marcus has experience, Toby doesn't. So we're seeing Toby as an old man in Marcus in some ways. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then
Bear
and Alberto was cool because, like you said, you know, they were similar in age. Alberto made different choices than Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. That's, well, and look at, you've got also Toby and Tanner. They both came from the same abusive environment.
Yeah.
They both understand caring about family. I mean, Tanner, when he's saying, go see your boys, and Toby says, I can't, I owe so much back alimony.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, you got that in your pocket from this robbery this morning. And he goes, but that's all needed for something else. And at that point, we don't know exactly what it is. But he says, huh. So Tanner stands up and leaves. And while Toby's talking to the waitress inside, he goes and robs the bank next door. And he comes back, and while they're getting away, he's like, here's the money. Go see your boys.
Yep.
But look how different they are. And part of that's personality, because Tanner's the one who did something about the abusive father.
Or not, as the older brother,
right?
It was almost like he felt responsible to do so.
He took action.
He took action, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah. So in that environment, and, you know, Toby stayed and took care of his mother.
Sure enough.
Didn't have to.
Yeah, he didn't have to do that.
Yeah. It's just all interesting to think about. Plus, it's just a great movie. Watching the heists being carried out, wondering if they're going to get caught, watching, you know, are the Texas Rangers going to catch them, and then realizing you want both sides to win somehow.
Right.
You know? And the way they were, you know, like burying the cars and changing the money in the casino, and then having the bank administer the trust so they would never do anything about it. Somebody said that they thought it made them think of The Sting in a way. It's almost got that con game element to it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's an element that I enjoy all the time. You know, the heist element is something that interests me a lot. But when I think about this movie, I think the main thing that gets to me is that it's tough. It's tough to decide who you're for, I guess. I know, mm-hmm. you know, we're kind of for everybody, but the thing is, all these decisions are being made in the past and in the present, and everything is complex enough and rich enough, and the people are real enough, the characters are real enough, that you understand where the decisions are coming from, and even if you don't agree with them, you understand and you can sympathize with them. Yeah. And it's really difficult to have anything but gray. You can't, there's no black and white in this where you can say, you know, this is, well, there's some things that happen that you can say are definitely wrong, but I'm just saying, yeah. I'm just saying that understanding of where they came from and how they got there and mm-hmm. what they're doing and why is amazing. And in, you know, we all go through similar things in a much smaller, you know, sphere, I guess. Mm-hmm. Where we're making complex decisions based on our pasts and futures and current circumstances and all that, we're making these decisions. And I guess it helps me to see other people or be more open, you know, to not being judgmental, where you can say, well, I don't know where that person's been. And like you said, you know, the sign of peace that we give in Mass, we're not asking, where have you been? You know, we're saying, peace be with you. You know, wherever you've been, peace be with you.
Right. Because sometimes you're having, and this is a very small level, sometimes you're having to turn around and give it to the person who's been letting their baby scream the entire time without taking them outside.
Yep.
You're still having to do that. That's required, you know.
Sure.
And it makes me think, it takes what you were saying, takes it all back again to those thieves on the cross next to Jesus, is we live our lives kind of the way these people do. We make decisions. Are they right? Are they wrong? What are our intentions? Oh my gosh. And Toby had the best of intentions. He wasn't going to hurt anyone. He was just taking away the money that he felt like had been robbed from his family in order to save something for his kids. Well, look what happened. He made terrible choices. Mm-hmm. But does he, at the end, acknowledge the truth? Is he repentant? Tanner, I think we can say if he was on that cross, he might be the one going, oh, shut up. We did it. We don't get away with anything. Hey, man, you're the real deal. But Toby might, if he's given enough time with Marcus or in silent reflection on his own, to kind of wrestle through it. I mean, where are we? We are the ones who are on those crosses too. Jesus is the only innocent one. He did that for us. So when I'm on that cross going, am I going, oh yeah, save me. I deserve it. You know?
Right. So are we the one saying, you know, hey, we deserve to be saved? Or are we the one that says, yes, we did it?
Yeah. He says, you're the only holy one. Can you save me?
I can see the truth.
I don't deserve it.
And this is my situation, and I can see clearly.
Right. I meant it for the best, but sometimes I didn't mean it for the best. Mm. Sometimes I deliberately chose what wasn't the right thing to do. You know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sometimes.
I was going to say, you know, we all look at it and go, oh, the last bank robbery went terribly wrong. Why did it go wrong? Because Toby wouldn't give up. He wouldn't say no when Tanner's going, let's go get it. It's the only way we can do it. Well, he's committed to this point, but no one's been killed. Yeah. It's when he won't say, you know what, we can't do this. That's when people get killed.
He was nervous. It was like he was, you know, if you say there's promptings from outside, he was definitely being told not to.
Right.
His conscience said no, but he did it anyway.
So we all make those choices. We all kind of, well, I still have another chance to say no, but you know what? I want this. Whatever my reason, I want this. And I have to accept these things happened because of my choice. And see, he's still not doing that. I didn't kill anyone. Marcus says, yes, you did.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus says to us, and you know, this is the point of confession and self-examine, as we've talked about before. This is the point of Lent, which we're, yeah. as we film this, it's Mardi Gras. Tomorrow's Ash Wednesday, or film yeah. this. Talking about a movie.
That's right.
As we record it. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting ready to go into 40 days of kind of going, what is the truth? What has built up that has to be scraped off so I can look at you and know who you are and know who I am? And it's okay. He'll help us fix it. He'll help us even when we can't fix it. He's the sufficiency we need.
Hmm. Amen. Yep. Amen. During all the stuff we've said in the last few minutes, one scene came back to mind. Do you remember when Jeff Bridges first arrived at the First Bank, and this guy in a pickup truck pulls up and he says, I'm going to go find them and I'm going to shoot them. And Jeff Bridges says something like, that would make things a whole lot less complicated for everybody but you.
Yeah.
And isn't that the case?
And what does the guy say to him? First, you'd have to find the tree. First, he's talking about string them up.
Right. Yeah.
But that's when he goes, I love West Texas.
I love West Texas. Right. Yeah.
But you're right. That's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So.
Fascinating stuff. What a movie.
It's yeah, so well done.
I've got to look for this guy's writing elsewhere. It's very interesting to me. So this person, his name is Taylor Sheridan.
Yeah, he was the writer,
and he's an actor, right? He's been in several things.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's been in several things. You know, in fact, he was in Hell or High Water. It says he was a cowboy in it. Sons of Anarchy, Veronica Mars.
Driving the cattle across the highway.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was an interesting point. We mentioned that, but that was interesting too. So he's written four things. Sicario?
Which was really praised, but I didn't see it.
Okay.
It's about drug lords or something.
Okay, and he's writing apparently a sequel to that, it says here, so... but interesting. Yeah, I'm going to definitely check more of that stuff out.
Well, and he was prompted to write this because his mother had the reverse mortgage thing happen to her.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And he was clearly angry. You know, the banks are the bad guys. But it made him start thinking about all this stuff. And so he started writing this.
Yeah. Cool. So well done.
Yeah. Yeah, really good job.
And a good match with everybody. The director, too. Yeah. And that's cool. Oh, it costs so little.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe it'll make more money now that it's been nominated for an Oscar. Maybe people will rent it. It's made $31 million, and I think they say you have to make back double what you spent in order to pay back. And maybe for small ones like this, it's not as much, but to pay back your expenses – and then also your marketing costs. And I remember it was marketed a lot. I mean, I saw ads for it and stuff.
Yeah, I did too. So when they talk about a production cost of a movie, so I'm looking down here, it says budget, $12 million estimated on IMDb. Does that include marketing?
I don't think it does.
Okay.
And I think that's why they say you have to make back double.
I see.
Because they usually spend as much in marketing as they spent on the movie.
Yeah.
Not always, but, you know, just depends.
Yeah, it's definitely a good movie.
Yes, so. And you should be able to rent it. And I don't know about
streaming. Yeah, I got it on Amazon is where I had it. It was only $7.99 to buy it, and I bought it because I knew I loved it. So.
Yeah. For the pool room.
It is in the pool room. I'm just curious. Yeah. Do you buy DVDs or do you buy electronic copies?
I buy DVDs.
Do you? Okay.
I don't trust the internet.
Yeah, the problem with buying it on the internet is, well, first of all, the internet has to be on for you to have access to it.
Yes.
And the second thing is, how you get to watch it has to exist. So you've got to have a computer or a TV that can connect to Amazon or something. So all of a sudden, you know, you've got a problem with the method of viewing as well. Everything's got to line up, you know, and whatever you have right now is not what you're going to have in a year, because things change so much. It's just incredible.
I know the idea of streaming is that it's immediate and simple, and it is not, it's often immediate, but not always if your internet's not working right, and it's often not simple.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But yeah, I just, well, and I get DVDs because I like having something physical, you know, uh-huh. And we still have a DVD player and all this stuff.
Yeah, but so do we. So
well,
do we.
Blu-ray player.
And I'm not going to say that I don't buy DVDs. I mean, I do. It's just on this one, I just grabbed it that way.
Well, we also, there are a couple places where I do movie discussions where part of the deal is I provide the movie for them to watch.
I see. Cool.
So for this one, in both those two places, we've discussed it. And so I had to drop the DVD off ahead of time so they could show it. And they don't have Blu-ray players, which is interesting to me.
They don't have Blu-ray players?
No, none of these places. These are all senior living communities. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, so do you need Blu-ray? Or, you know, what kind? Oh, not Blu-ray. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they're making do with some old DVD player, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They're like $20 now. You could get a DVD player, it seems like. Yeah.
Well, they don't, you know, I don't think they think about it. If it works, why would they replace it? They absolutely have other things they're doing.
I imagine some of those places have VHS players.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But they all have big flat screen TVs, and VHS doesn't show up very well on a lot of those. It's really dark.
That's good.
Yeah. We tried after we got a newer TV and went, oh, my gosh, now we have
TVs. Yeah. So. Oh, that's something. Well, cool. Well, thank you for selecting this because it's fantastic.
I'm so glad you liked it.
Yep, I really did. So I will be watching it again.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You it's bet. Like kind of like Gone Baby Gone without all the language, in a sense. It's a lot to think about.
Right, right.
Okay. Now what's next?
What's next is Flowers for Algernon by Daniel Keyes. Yeah.
Another
feel-good movie, right. We're going to read the novella as opposed to the novel. If you read the novel, I mean, it's fine. The novel doesn't add that much to it, in my opinion. There's a relationship that's there that didn't exist in the novella, but there's just not much. The novella is just, that's the gem, in my opinion. It's the diamond. So that's what we'll be reading, is a 1960 novella. And my copy is in a collection. I'm looking at my books here. It's a Science Fiction Hall of Fame, Volume 1, I believe, has it in there.
And I don't have the book in front of me, but I've got an anthology that's from the magazine that it originally came out in. It might be Fantasy and Science Fiction magazine.
Fantasy and Science Fiction, right.
Yeah, and they have, you know, Best Of, and it's in that. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to it because I haven't read it since I originally did, and I'm sure it was the novella whenever it came out.
Well, good. So, I hope you enjoy it again. It is something else, I think.
Oh, it's going to tear my heart out. I'm perfect for Lent.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So yeah, is Lent where you hit yourself with things or just contemplate things?
Yeah, <That's> exactly. Right.
I love it.
Oh, all gracious. Right.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yes, and thank you. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll be back in a couple weeks. See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.